We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
What we didn't want to do was just offer rental as an experience. We wanted to become a utility in our customers' lives. And the way to become a utility is to interact with that customer many times, just like you do with your phone.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Our guest today is Rakesh Tandon. He is the co-founder and CEO of La Tote, an online women's clothing rental business. Just last year, La Tote acquired Lord & Taylor, and it also opened its first physical location. We'll talk to him about the experience of growing La Tote and what's in it for the future. Welcome, Rakesh.
Thanks so much for having me.
And my co-host today is my colleague and my friend, Sarah Rand. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
I'm super good. I'm here with 40,000 of my closest retail buddies.
Yeah.
Retail's big show.
850 exhibitors in the main halls,
it's
80 exhibitors
show.
In the Innovation Center. More speakers, 48% of the speakers are female leaders in this industry.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So we have a really good time, but it's rather exhausting. I'm glad that you're here. This is your first one. So we don't want to take too much of your time, so you can go out and spend the hours that it takes to actually explore all of this. It's not a 5-minute proposition, I can tell you that.
Which is the biggest reason I'm here.
Well, that's great. Rakesh, tell us a little bit about your background leading up to La Tote.
All right. So I come from a very non-traditional background for a tech company or a retail company. Started my career out here in New York with JP Morgan. Did investment banking, did mergers and acquisitions of technology companies. Worked for a few years here, then moved out to the West Coast to work with my boss from JP Morgan, who started a boutique investment bank in San Francisco, focused on media and telecom. Did that for another 5 years. So did 12 years of investment banking. And then came up with the idea of La Tote with my co-founder, who was working with me at that time in the Bay Area. We came up with the idea. We impulsively quit our jobs. And
how do
we
you
said,
impulsively quit your jobs? So I guess I've done that one time. But
I feel like that's the definition of quitting your job.
It was like, seems like a good idea. Seems like we could solve this problem.
How did you guys come up with the idea? You say we just had this idea. Were you looking for an idea or were you one day like, we need to do,
no.
I see this problem?
So what I'd say is I've never did I think I would do banking for 12 years. Banking was not my calling. So I always wanted to do something different. Just didn't know what. And I didn't want to jump into something else, try something else that I didn't know I would like or not. So, you know, Brett, my co-founder, and I started talking about this at dinner with our wives, his girlfriend then, wife now. And we're doing dinner, and my wife is going through a second pregnancy. She's sharing clothes with her siblings and some close friends and some co-workers. And Brett's wife had a formal swap group. How often does that happen, that this coincidence of these two girls talking about the act of sharing and swapping? And, you know, Lindsay was in a more formal swap group. They would get together once every 2 or 3 weeks, swap clothes, drink wine, and then track it all on Google Docs. So we said, two very different women, very different places in their lives, sharing and swapping. And my wife, you know, was working. She was at Google and sharing with her friends at work for everyday clothes. So we said, two very different women, very different places in their lives, very different demographics doing this. Maybe there's something here. And that's when we started to dig in a little bit and realize there's a broader spectrum of women that are doing this. It's not just our wives. It's just a very hyper-local activity where you've got to get together in one place, find people that you trust, people that have similar things to share, similar style, similar aesthetic as you, and are of similar sizes. And so we said, what if we take that friction away and make this a more seamless shopping, sharing, renting experience for women. That's where the idea came from. And we were naive enough to think we were the two guys that would solve this problem pretty easily. So,
you know, it's always so easy.
So I want to say a few weeks later, we said, I think we got it. We got the business model. We should quit our jobs and go do this full time. So that's how the journey began. Yeah, and it's been a super interesting ride since then.
You know, it is interesting, though. I mean, in order to be successful, I think in any business, you know, you have to be willing to take risks. It has to be smart risks, but a risk nonetheless.
I think there's got to be a little bit of naivete.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, knowing what I know now about this business and the complexity, I wouldn't tell anyone to do it. I wouldn't do it again. So yeah. I think a little bit of that naivete kind of worked out for us.
It worked out for you guys.
Can you tell us a little bit about why this model? I mean, you have competitors out there that have slightly different models. They're looking at slightly different, maybe occasions, things like that.
Sure.
Why is Latote the way it is?
So because the problem was sort of inspired by my wife, you know, wanted to really look at the use case. So my wife was going through a pregnancy and we said pregnancy could be really interesting. But then when we peeled it one level deeper and we said, why is she actually using it? It's the problem of variety every day. Closet full of clothes, nothing to wear every day. And you have that problem when you're dressing for work. And we said, that is the market we want to go after. What we didn't want to do was just offer rental as an experience. We wanted to become a utility in our customers' lives. And the way to become a utility is to interact with that customer many times, just like you do with your phone. So we said, how could we become that utility where this customer would keep coming for more? You would change the way she thinks about her life, she thinks about her closet, and she thinks about clothes. And that's where we said, we're going to start out with unlimited rentals monthly for one fixed price. You can rent as many or as few times as you want. Because we want to change the way you dress for work, the way you think about your life or your closet or your clothes.
You know, we hear the expression a lot, and maybe it's getting old and we should stop using it as much as we do, but it's disruption. You know, this industry is being disrupted. And you were a disruptor. I mean, you are a disruptor. How do you define that? And if you, do you see that as an ongoing, that this is just going to happen? Oh, this is the cycle of retail?
I think retail needed this disruption. Retail, if you think about it, till about 10 years ago, there was not much innovation in retail. Until about the time the iPhone came out, retail had been sort of same for the last 100 years. You know, you open more doors, you sell more stuff, and the internet and the iPhone completely changed it. I think people, you know, women have been growing up sharing, swapping for a long time.
Yes, they have.
But there just wasn't technology great enough to enable that. There's just nothing that would connect you until the iPhone sort of disrupted the whole mobile internet. And what I'd say is we were able to take advantage of that. Our idea isn't disruptive. Our business model is disruptive in the way the industry is. But by itself, it's not a really disruptive idea. It's just disruptive because nothing had happened in retail for a very long time.
Okay, I want to take the question of disruption a little bit further.
Sure.
I think a lot of companies here are talking about not just how do you be a disruptor, but how do you disrupt yourselves? And for someone like you who has disrupted the way women shop, how do you keep the business fresh? How do you keep your customers fresh? How do you make sure that you don't become the old?
So keeping a pulse of the market, right? So, and being really objective about who you are, what the objectives of the business are, and what the mission of the company is. I'd say, you know, the positive that came off us not being part of the industry was we were able to look at our business and the market very objectively. We weren't emotional about it. we're still not users of this product. I don't wear women's clothes. So I can look at it very objectively. I talk to customers often about what they like and what they don't like. And I can be objective because I'm not a user of the product. So I have to always be listening to customers, be understanding what they want, what they expect from us, and then translating into what we can offer to them to continue to delight them every day. So I'd say it's just constantly seeing where the market's going and talking to customers and making sure the entire company has that culture of openness in understanding customer needs and then trying to find ways to respond to them as efficiently as possible.
You do realize, Rakesh, that retail is dying, and then you go and open a brick-and-mortar store. That flies in the face of what everybody's saying. Retail is dead. It's dying. We're in an apocalypse. We have zombie malls, and you're opening stores. It makes me wonder, really. I mean, how are you so successful?
So let me share some stats with you. 70% of retail still happens in the offline world. 30% of it is roughly happening online. So people are still going to malls. People are still going to stores, just not as often. So, you know, when they're interacting with a product for the first time, they typically want to touch, feel, understand if it is for them. We're still tactile. When we get the next version of it, we may be okay ordering that product online. So I'd say there's an experiential component to shopping that will likely never go away. However, the frequency with which we will go to buy products will likely go down. So replenishment likely will not happen in the physical world. But experiential, the first touch, feel, understanding will likely still continue to happen there. The other component is, I would say, retail, as we know it today, if it doesn't evolve, dies. So if people continue to open malls and retail stores the way they had been 5, 10, 15 years ago, it would not work, which is why we're trying to bring in a lot of the technology that we've developed into the stores to make the store experience better, to make that experience almost as personalized as it is online. Online, we know and we understand you well, and we can cookie you and can really give you very, very personalized offerings at every single touch point. We could do the same thing in the physical world, but people just didn't think about it. People just haven't made those investments, and we're making those investments. The other aspect of it is, if we open 150,000 square feet stores again, I think we would die as a company too, which is why we're trying to adapt to a very different way the customer wants to shop, in a much more curated, personalized environment with a much tighter set of products that appeals to that demographic at that point in time. So we're taking a very data-driven approach to curating every single store in the way that's never been done before.
I'm curious, though. I mean, when you say you're using a lot of the technology to, you're taking from online and you're putting it into the, which is virtual, into the store experience, how does that work?
So think about it this way. We know you, your style, your size, your purchase history, your return patterns, the brands you like to shop, the price points you like to shop. And we've taken all of that behavior and we stored it online. Now imagine you have that app on your phone and you come into the store and the store already recognizes that Bill's walked in. You walk up to a screen or you walk up to a store associate. She already knows who you are, how you've shopped, how many years you've been shopping with us, and can do two things. One, direct you to the section that's appropriate for you based on all of these dimensions that we've talked about, or she can curate a full fitting room for you with the products that she knows will fit you, are in the price bands that you like to shop, are the brands that you like to shop, and appeal to you at that point in time based on the weather patterns in that area.
Wow.
So we're really taking a very, data-driven, one-to-one personalization, and we're trying to bring that into the stores.
There are a lot of online retailers, pure play online retailers of the past who have opened stores now, right? You can go to a Warby Parker store. You can go to an Amazon store.
Allbirds.
You can go to an Allbirds store. Everybody's moving.
Yep.
You guys did not open your own store. You bought a big one. So why was that the right decision for you guys?
So this was the analysis that we did where we said, we're going to open between 40 and 50 stores across the U.S. in the top 20 DMAs. And then while we're looking at that market, the Lord & Taylor deal sort of came about. And it was a build versus buy calculation. It was about understanding how quickly this deal could give us that footprint in the markets we wanted a presence. It would give us the scale that we needed. And it would give us the know-how to doing our own stores in markets where we currently don't have a presence. So it was really about, you know, a build versus buy calculation and saying, this seems like a no-brainer for us. The other thing was there's a big overlap between the Lord & Taylor customers and our customer base. Now, you would think, you know, the Lord & Taylor customers are a little bit older. They may be, but there's a big portion of our customer base that overlaps very, you know, directly with the Lord & Taylor customers. And so we figured this would be a great way to offer, one, the Lord & Taylor customers more variety, more consumption, more ways to consume, buy, rent, subscribe. And it would provide our customers with another way to consume. So as they're renting from us, they're still spending about 70% of their dollars with other retailers to buy replenishment items, to buy makeup and categories of products that we don't currently offer. This now gives us a bigger share of wallet with our customers and a more convenient place for our customers to shop or rent. So we're a much broader set of offerings for this customer than simply a rental offering for her.
So when you look at the this opportunity that you've created for yourself, you've increased your employee count. You've increased, I mean, this is, I know that, you know, you looked at it and you said, well, this makes sense. That's, you're biting off a lot. I mean, going from primarily just an online experience to dozens of store locations with hundreds, if not thousands, of employees.
And inventory.
And inventory, yeah. And everything that goes with that.
So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely a big shift. You know, it's a lot of work.
It'd be like going from a condo to, like, you know, a hotel. Owning a condo to owning a hotel.
Yeah.
The positive is, you know, traditional retail has been done for a long time. So a lot of people on our team have experience with that. We've kept most of the people from the Lord & Taylor team. And I think that's a really solid team that's already starting to execute on our strategy. So I feel pretty good about what we're doing. Yes, it is a lot of work. There's a lot of technology upgrades that we need to make. But that's where Latote's expertise comes into play. Because we've spent the last 7 years really building out tools and technology to run our business effectively and efficiently, I think we're really well positioned to sort of take advantage of that and give Lord & Taylor all the tools and technology to really bring it ahead of all other major multi-brand retailers out there.
You know, we have a lot of students that actually listen to this program, and mentioned before, our listeners heard this before, but there are actual professors that make their students listen and then quiz them on it. It's wild. But one of the things, you know, I look at somebody like you that has had the success and it's continuing to grow. I mean, you started, you were successful, you continue to grow on that success. And so there are students that will be listening to this saying, I want to do that. That's where I want to be. That is my burning passion and desire to do exactly that. I've got a great idea, and I want to turn that idea into something that's going to make a difference. What's advice? What is the advice that you would give them? Be naive?
I think you've got to be really hungry. you've got to evaluate that idea in a way where if you feel every day when you're going to sleep that you can't sleep and you're giddy with excitement about your idea and that you're really passionate about it, do it. Because otherwise, it's going to be really hard. You know, things get really hard. We've had lots of ups and downs. We've almost gone out of business 3 times. And if you're not passionate about it, you're never going to be able to put in the work. You're never going to feel like you've put in your 110% every single day.
Right.
So you've got to be really passionate. You've got to be really hungry. You've got to be really resourceful. And you've got to have a strong stomach.
Yeah, for
you know,
sure.
As an entrepreneur, especially if you're going to do a venture-backed company. And what's different from a traditional business that's bootstrapped versus venture-backed is your timelines are much shorter. You're trying to achieve what other people do in 20 or 30 years in 4 or 5 years. So you're going to be working a lot longer, longer days. You're going to be working hours longer than your friends. And things are going to get tough. Things are going to get tough. So really be passionate. And if you're going to be passionate, you know, it could work out really well.
Be passionate. I like it.
I do too. So I don't know if you've listened to our program before, but there is a program within the program. And we call it Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
You ready?
All right.
Okay. In this, we're going to ask you a question. You're going to answer it. You're going to answer it with the first thing that comes to mind. Don't think about it.
Okay.
Just answer. Are you ready?
Ready.
Sarah.
What subscription service do you use?
Trunk Club.
What is the one thing that's always in your refrigerator?
Coca-Cola and champagne.
Well, gotta have champagne if you have Coca-Cola. Actually, Coca-Cola is like champagne of soft drinks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
What technology are you most excited about?
AR.
What is the last book that you read?
Super Pumped.
What's that about?
It's about Uber.
Oh, okay. Cool.
What is your go-to theme song?
Eye of the Tiger.
Of course. Every entrepreneur should say that. What is your favorite comfort food?
Indian food.
Best advice you've ever received?
Has some cuss words in it. Everyone's trying to screw you every day.
That's not a cuss word.
We'll leave that.
We're just going to leave that. Yeah. But I think maybe you substituted something. But that's good. You can actually take that to the next extreme.
Yeah.
Last question. If you have superpower, what would that superpower be?
Stay really young.
Staying really young. Yeah. That's
one of the things I'm investing in is slowing down the process of aging. So I want to live to be 200. So we'll see.
I'm so tired. I can't wait.
I think people would be really irritated if I lived to 200. Be like, oh no, dear Lord.
I'm sure my wife doesn't want
that. He's still alive. Well, Rakesh, if people want to learn more about Latote, where do they go on the internet?
YouTube's got a lot of really good stuff about Latote. And then you can reach out to one of us and we'd be happy to talk to you. I can't promise I'll talk to everyone, but you know, I try and make time for new budding entrepreneurs, people that are curious, students. So I'll spend, you know, anywhere from, you know, an hour to 2 hours a week spending time with people. This is my way of, you know, paying it forward.
You know, we're going to have to make sure that the foundation knows about Rakesh and his passion. And we have a student program. They just had over 1,200 students here in the city for a program that lasted 1.5 days, and it's spectacular, and I think they would really benefit from you being a part of that, so we'll let them.
Yeah, I'd love to be.
Rakesh, thank you so much for being
a part
of Retail Gets Real, and Sarah, thank you so much for doing such a spectacular job co-hosting.
Thank you, Bill.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about today's discussion on our website, retailgetsreal.com. And please send your feedback and episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. From the Javits Center, at the Big Show in New York City. This is Retail Gets Real. Thanks for listening.